So we will continue our study of Sefer Shoftim. We're heading towards the finish line. And we're up to Perek Yud Tes, chapter 19, which is a new story, a very tragic story. And, you know, the bulk of this Perek kind of sets the scene for the tragic story. And then Perek Chaf is the national reaction to the tragic story. And the same machlokas that we've had kind of running through the previous story of Pesel Micha in terms of when historically did the story take place, again we see it here and we'll highlight it in the opening phrase, because we have the opening line in Perek Yud Tes Pasuk Aleph of the refrain that we've seen before. Vayi bayamim ahem, it was in those days, umelech ein biYisrael. There is no king in Yisrael. And there's a pause, right? That's the asnachta under the word Yisrael. It's a semi-pause. That's the introduction to this. And on that very thought, the Metzudas David says two notes. He notes one just practical thought, that when we read what happens in this chapter, had there been a king, it never would have happened. Had there been a king, the theme of this, the overall theme is a terrible crime is committed, and the criminals are not judged, and the criminals are kind of let free, and therefore, you know, people have to take matters into their own hands, and the overreaction perhaps to that, you know, would never have taken place if there was a king. If there was a unified form of government, then it never would have happened. And then he quotes from the Seder Olam, which is a later text of Midrashim, that even this also took place during the time of the beginning of the Shoftim, before Osniel was even a Shofet. And according to that approach, what it's maybe trying to highlight is that the Shoftim were able to provide a little bit of that national leadership. It wasn't the extent and the success that a king could potentially have. And the other approach is that one of two things: either it did happen later on in terms of the end of the time period of the Shoftim, but either way, whether it happened at the beginning or it happened at the end, Shmuel HaNavi is clearly placing it towards the end to kind of be the last stories of the time period, of the overall time period of the Shoftim, which again, Pesel Micha highlights the Avodah Zarah and like the religious life that people were living, how such a horrific story and a religious offense could happen. And this is going to be more bin adam chaveira, between humans one to another, and also morality, how such a story could happen. Again, ein melech, there's no proper king. And then the pasuk continues. And it seems to say it something almost innocently. Vayihi ish Levi. There was a man from the tribe of Levi, gar biyar kisei har Ephraim, living at the foothills, at the bottom of Har Ephraim. Vayikach lo isha pilegesh. He takes for himself a wife who's a pilegesh, which we'll talk about, a concubine. Mi beis lechem Yehuda, she came from beis lechem Yehuda. And throughout this story, we don't, in terms of the characters in the story, we don't really get names. We get very vague descriptions. So we have an Ish Levi, he's a man from the tribe of Levi. So Levi doesn't have a place to live. Levi can live anywhere they want. He happens to be living in Har Ephraim, which is a little bit similar to, we have the Levi who ends up working for Micha, is also a Levi who's present in Har Ephraim. These are the two negative stories of a Levi living in Har Ephraim. There's the poetic solution in the book of Shmuel, that the book of Shmuel opens with Elkanah, the father of Shmuel, who's also kind of described as a Levi who's living in Har Ephraim. He's not a natural born Ben Ephraim. He's a Levi. That's why Shmuel ends up, when Chana dedicates him to work in the Mishkan, it wasn't unnatural totally, because he was a Levi. It was a little unnatural that he started his work in the Mishkan as a young child. But working in the Mishkan was something normal for a Levi. So that's kind of like the good story. This is the second. Now, what's the significance of that particularly? A Levi and Har Ephraim, what's the greater meaning? Not 100% sure. You know, we always have the two main wives of Yaakov Avinu, and the two kind of main divisions of Klal Yisrael is the Bnei Rachel and the Bnei Leah, the six children of Leah versus Yosef and Binyamin, the Bnei Rachel. This, you know, maybe you say there's some type of bringing together of the two here, but, and it doesn't work well, meaning the Levi coming from Leah and Har Ephraim is Rachel. You know, eventually what we need is we need, and there is a mix of something coming from Beis Lechem Yehuda. Eventually we need Yehuda, because that's the rightful tribe. Why this is the exact recipe of tribes, you could say it's just random. Maybe you could try to find some significance. He takes a wife from a different region, from Beis Lechem Yehuda. Beis Lechem is a city that we know from later on. We know from it also from the time period of the Shoftim. We don't read about it here, but by Yibimei Shvot HaShoftim in the book of Rus. So the book of Rus, the characters are coming from Beis Lechem. Beis Lechem, like the ancient city of Bethlehem, Beis Lechem, which is in the land of Yehuda. So he takes a wife. That sounds innocent in and of itself. However, she's called a Pilegesh. A Pilegesh is a concubine. The Metsudos Tzion, in his definition of the term, he's basically paraphrasing the Mishnah. When we use the term Isha for wife and Pilegesh for concubine, what is the difference between them? So the difference between them is a wife is married fully and she has the financial protection of a ksuba, which in that day, for sure, before, let's say, women are fully in the workforce, that many of them are, if not most, if not or all today. So the ksuba was a financial level of security. So it represents a more, the ultimate and the real definition of marriage, because there's financial security for the woman, as well as kiddushin, that there's a level of sanctity. There's a bracha, asher kiddushanu. It takes place in a more of a context of, right? It's fascinating that we use the word kiddushin. You know, normally when we think of kodesh, we think of the temple, we think of Beis HaMikdash or Mishkan. It is borrowed in the sense of marriage, because in Judaism we believe that there's sanctity to a marriage. So those two things are lacking in the relationship with the Pilegesh. She is a type of wife, a concubine, but it's missing the level of sanctity of Kiddushin. There is no Kiddushin performed, and there's no Ksuba, so she has no financial backing. However, it is considered to be an exclusive relationship. It's not something where she could decide just to leave. I guess you have to ask the question, which I don't have the research in front of you. How do you begin your relationship with the Pilegesh, and how do you formally end your relationship with the Pilegesh? Most likely, it's you would venture to take a guess that it's similar to how does marriage and divorce work outside the context of Judaism? I mean, Judaism recognizes marriage, that Gilui Arayos is a prohibition. It's one of the Zion mitzvahs B'nai Noach. How does a non-Jewish person get married, and how does a non-Jewish person get divorced according to the Torah? So the Rambam in Hilchos Ishus, when he talks about the laws of marriage, he basically talks about how things used to be and then how things are. And how things are post the giving of the Torah is that there has to be the mitzvah of Kiddushin, and we give something of value in front of two witnesses. There's a whole proceeding to a Jewish wedding. But before the Torah was given, it's almost like if a couple decides, and there still needs to be the element of consent on both parties, that this man wants to marry this woman wants to marry this man, it's almost like the decision to get married and just moving in with each other begins the marriage. And then if there was a demonstration, so then when it comes to ending the marriage, so post the giving of the Torah, a Jewish divorce is defined by, it has to be written, it has to be with a document, the Kasav La Sefer Krisos in the book of Devarim, you write a document of severance, we call it a get. The Torah calls it a sefer krisus, a scroll or a letter of severance, of separation. But for a non-Jew, it's most likely just coming to terms and both parties agreeing that this union is now over, and then they go their separate ways. So perhaps with the Pilegesh, it works that way. You know, you're kind of a looming question, which we're not going to have an answer to, is why is this person from the tribe of Levi, why is this man from Levi, why does he have the relationship with this woman only as a concubine? It's by definition a less than relationship. it's by definition lacking the kiddushin, so it's lacking the sanctity. It's also lacking the financial security. So you're kind of asking, why is he interested in that relationship? You're going to ask, why is she interested in that relationship? And then we're even going to come into large contact with her father. It seems that even her father is interested in that relationship. And you can wonder, does the fact that this whole story takes place with the Pilegesh, does that also speak to the times? The fact that he wasn't willing to up her marriage to a proper marriage, and the fact that she was maybe willing to accept a less than type of marriage situation, does that speak to the morality of the times? That people weren't, you know, holding the proper value of marriage on the pedestal that the Torah normally does, and that when we maybe see his reaction towards her or her towards him, is there a lacking in their connection because the relationship is not cemented with, you know, kiddushin and real marriage? Yeah.
Levim, in those days, they were allowed to have pilegesh. There was no like extra special rules.
No,
Levim,
there's no. I mean, even neither. Presumably, anyone could take a pilegesh, even a kohen. Meaning, a pilegesh, the extra isurim that a kohen has is set by the Torah isha, right? So it has to be someone who is not a grusha, not a divorced woman, not a zona, not someone who was promiscuous in that way. There's a whole list. Pilegesh is not on the list. Presumably, it would be okay for a kohen. Presumably, it would be okay for a levi. One would, and this is something we don't find, you know, a question that we don't have an answer to. Did he have another wife? Did this Ish Levi have one wife, and this is his Pilegesh? Is it his only relationship? The way we're going to, you know, not that it's our job to play judgment on his character, but this is the story that the Tanakh chose for us to kind of almost leave Sefer Shoftim, and so we're left with analyzing each piece. So his personality and his character traits are going to be highlighted. The fact that he doesn't necessarily treat her with respect, as we'll see, is that because she's a second wife? And we know what the Torah speaks about. The Torah speaks about, let's say, in the context of Eishes Yefas Toar, when in war, when a man takes a captive in war, so it's not the ideal relationship. And the Medrash even has this beautiful explanation how the first few paragraphs in Parshas Ki Tzetze kind of flow to each other. That a person, the first mitzvah in Parshas Ki Tzetze is the mitzvah of Eishes Yefas Toar. The second one is what happens when a person has one wife who's loved, one wife who's hated, and it's the hated, quote-unquote, wife who produces a bechor. There's a prohibition. You're not allowed to not treat that son as a bechor. And then the third parsha, the third paragraph in Ki Tzetze, is the mitzvah, is the concept of ben sor umor, the wayward, rebellious son. The Medrash Tanchuma actually loops them together and says, you took an Eishes Yefas Toar. The relationship wasn't built on, you know, values. The relationship was built on an attractive, and in the midst of war, that ended up leading to a relationship where you ended up hating her, and you were married to her. So you had an isha ahuva, you had an isha snua. The isha snua is the Eishes Yefas Toar, and if by chance she produced the bechor, and now that bechor is in the house, he too is hated, and then he that's the type of son who becomes a ben sor mor. Again, using kind of that flow, but it speaks to when you have a relationship that's kind of less than. So in the Tanakh itself, when you have two marriages and the two marriages are both, you know, high quality marriages, we see it not always working out so well, right? So if you introduce that marriage B is inferior, so then that most likely that leads to not treating the person well, and that could have had an effect on the entire story. And how, you know, not saying that the fault is between this Ish Levi and this Pilegesh, but it's kind of the symptom that their marriage wasn't a real important marriage, and that kind of put a trajectory where it goes. So what happens is that they're married, again, married in the sense of concubine type of marriage, Pasuk Beis. Vatizne alav pilagsho. Great debate on this phrase, vatizne. Vatizne alav pilagsho if you translate it literally, so if I look at my translation, it says his concubine deserted him. So I have that in the art scroll. What do we have? And we have one other translation. Pasuk Beis, went away. So there are mafarshim who that right the Rashi and others, they define it very more in a parv way. She just left. She left. It happens to be that the shoresh of the shoresh is znus, which is promiscuity, which would make it sound like she wasn't faithful to him. Some of the Rishonim take that approach. The question becomes, those who say like the Rashi's approach, eventually, right? We're saying that she went away from him. We're going to see that he makes a big push eventually to reunite with her. So you have to some of the Mefarshim say, well, they don't say this part, but we're presuming that he followed halacha, that he followed Jewish law. Had she actually been promiscuous, he wouldn't have been allowed to pursue her, because the strict law is that if a married woman is not faithful, so the halacha, strict halacha, is asur labal v'asur labal. She's prohibited to remain in the relationship with the person that she would violate gilui raias with. But she's also prohibited to go back to her original husband, whether that husband is a full husband or a concubine husband. So some want to prove that the fact that he makes such an effort to win her back and get her back shows that she was not unfaithful. The parentheses that you put there is that, at the end of the day, we're not gonna try to seek out his name to name our children after him. Meaning, at the end of the day, he's not. He makes some decisions that are not proper. So would that person, that type of person, maybe would go after a wife that he's not supposed to try to reunite with? But again, these are the two approaches. The language is a strong language, which definitely leads Chazal to explain that there was some level of there was some discord that led to the split, as it says, "Vatizna olav pilag show, vatelach meitol beis aviyah." She left him. She went from him to her father's house, el beis lechem to beis lechem Yehuda. Vati sham yamim. She was there for many days, right? Yamim, when it's used in plural, sometimes can even mean up to a year, right? The phrase yamim yamima can mean a year. Here, it qualifies it arba'a chadoshim, 4 months. She was away from. She ran back to her father's house, Beis Lechem Yehuda, for 4 months. Maybe you want to say that the ease with which the phrase kind of flows one to another. Batizna olav pilag shav atelach meito al beis avia. You would have maybe thought that if there was actual znus, maybe you would say that it would have been a little more descriptive of mentioning a man, of mentioning a scene. It just says that she deserted him, she left him, and she went to her father's house. Maybe that's how they read it, as more of a power of language, not that she actually was not faithful to him. But Chazal debate what was it that caused her to leave. And apparently there are two approaches that the Gemara cites, the Medrash cites, that he got angry. Either he found a fly in his food, or he also wasn't happy with she wasn't clean enough for him. She didn't bathe enough, and that there was kind of these minor infractions that boiled over, and he got angry at her, and in that house of anger, she ran away. She didn't feel comfortable. And Chazal point out, and Mefarshim point out, a couple of lessons that can be learned about what happens when there's anger in a house. What happens when you kind of allow for big reactions to small things, and how that, there's a little bit of a snowball effect that it just grows and grows from here. And had he handled his home differently, had he reacted to things differently, she never would have run away, and the whole dominoes that's going to happen here wouldn't have happened. But she goes back to her father's house for 4 months. Pasuk Gimel. Vayakam Isha. Right? Her husband gets up. Right? It's always a good lesson right? The dot in the hey, emapek hey, has to be red because it changes the meaning. Vayakam isha, if you just read it, vayakam isha, so that means the woman got up. Vayakam isha means her husband got up. So when you're sitting and we're learning shoftim together on a Tuesday afternoon, okay, it's not such a big deal. When you come to Parshas Matos in Sefer Bamidbar, towards the end of Sefer Bamidbar, the first Aliyah talks all about nedarim, vows, for whatever reason, the Torah chooses that the main lesson about vows is in the context of a woman who takes the vow and whether or not her husband or her father has the ability to remove the vow, what's called hafaras nedarim. Similar to hataras nedarim, which we're used to from Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, Kol Nidre, that's with a Beis Din of three people, rabbis, people, who can absolve or kind of hataras nedarim. It's like they release it. There's a right of a husband for hafaras nedarim. So there, constantly, there are different words. There's the woman and her husband. So you have to make sure to read it as isha. Definitely the minyan you were discussing, they probably would attack you if you did not read that mapik hey. You know, generally it's always important to pronounce a word properly, but there it literally the little dot and the emphasis of the ha changes the meaning. So this is just a good example of it. The Yakam Isha, her husband gets up. And again, we're even though it's only a relationship of concubine, that's how the Tanakh refers. It is a marriage. It's still a marriage. The fact that she got up and left is not enough to end the relationship between husband and Pilegesh. Maybe you say that it needs to be consensual. It needs to be that both parties are agreeing to end it. And here she just got up and ended it and left. Maybe you say he's angry, like Chazal say, but just because you're angry doesn't mean you want to end a relationship. So he gets up, he goes after her, ledaber aliba, to speak kind of literally on her heart, or sometimes you would use the word al as like against, meaning he has to fight against her heart in the sense that, I guess in the positive way you would say he's trying to win her heart over. But right now her heart is against him, so he is challenging her heart, lahashiva, to return her to him. V'na'aro imo, he had an attendant, he had a helper. V'tzemer chamorim, he had a pair of donkeys. He has a donkey for her to ride on. V'ativiehu beis aviha, and apparently after showing himself, he got there, she brought him into her father's house. V'yarehu aviha na'ara, and her father sees him, the husband. V'yismach l'kraso, and he's happy. He's happy to greet him. And where's their happiness? So the happiness most likely is whether or not this father ever dreamed that this was going to be the marriage his daughter would have, we probably would all say probably not. But once she is in such a marriage, so what will be her prospects if the marriage comes to an end? What will be, right, a someone's former Pilegesh? What is that going to be on the dating scene of biblical shoftim? She's most likely she's not a basula anymore. She's not a virgin. So who's going to want to marry her fully? Who's going to even maybe be willing to take her as a Pilegesh? It sounds crazy when we know the end of the story, how it ends, but it could well be for this father, in his mind, the safest his daughter would be and the most secure she would be based on her current situation would be to remain in this marriage. And so there's an element of simcha greeting this Ish Levi. We generally speak very highly of the tribe of Levi, that the tribe of Levi was a little bit, it was supposed to be a raised tribe. They didn't receive a portion in the land. They have these special cities, You know, they don't work in the Mishkan that often. What were the Levim doing? So the approach in Chazal is that the Levim, the Kohanim, they were the teachers of Israel. They were the ones who teach. The Rambam even uses this language that basically anyone else who wants to join the tribe of Levi and become teachers, you know, everyone's, you're welcome. But basically, they are the teachers of Klal Yisrael. So is there some level of prestige, you know, that there's, and that's why he's happy. You know, I don't know. You know, is it better to be the Pilegesh of someone from the tribe of Levi than married fully to someone from another tribe? I don't know. But the Tanakh didn't have to be, the Tanakh definitely didn't have to describe his feelings as simcha, which it does. Vayismach l'kraso, and then even as we see, he's going to be, you know, even in Tanakh, we don't always have the best relationships between father-in-law and son-in-law. But this seems to be the father-in-law is like overly over the top to take care of the son-in-law. And again, using the words husband, using the words son-in-law for the relationship, even though the relationship lacked the kiddush and it lacked the ksuba, but it still exists. Pasuk Dalid, vayechazak bin bo chosno. He took hold of him. Avi hanara, the father of the girl, took hold of his son-in-law, vayeshev ito, and caused him to stay with him. Shloshas yamim, for 3 days. Vayochlu, and they ate. Vayishtu, and they drank. Vayolunu sham, and he stayed there. There seems to be an element of pushiness, of pushing the son-in-law, stay and have a good time. Don't. You came back for her, but I want to take care of you. I want to be the doting father-in-law to take care of you. Shloshas yamim, for 3 days. A lot of times throughout Tanakh, we have periods of 3 days. And you, usually when we point to 3 days, we highlight three. There's a modern day professor who wrote extensively, did a lot of research on Sefer Yonah. So in Sefer Yonah, he puts forward this following. It sounds like a basic idea, but I think it has significance. Yonah's inside, in the beginning of Perek Beis, Yonah is in the fish for 3 days and nights. And the Tanakh kind of goes out of its way to say that, and then he davens to Hashem. It's almost as if the Tanakh is pointing us in the direction that it was only after 2 days was not enough for Yonah to be inside the fish. 1 day was not, it's three. Why three? So this, I think his name is Professor Uriel Simon, or Simon probably, because it's in Israel. He has a theory that three is the shortest, longest number. Meaning, three is the shortest significant amount. That when it's 3 days, that's already a chunk of time. And that when we look all throughout, there's so many stories in Tanakh that involve 3 days, whether it was Avram Avinu with the 3 days to go from the commandment to actual Akedah. Klal Yisrael has 3 days before, you know, kind of in their preparation for Matan Torah. Yonah is there for 3 days. Here, this is much less significant than those major events. But if the message that the father-in-law is trying to give to the son-in-law is like, I care about you, I want to take care of you, I want to show you a good time. So 3 days, it needed to be at least 3 days. Now we're going to see the father-in-law wants more. But 3 days is significant because it's establishing their relationship. It's cementing the relationship. Three is a chazaka in rabbinic language. You know, three means it's gonna stay. And that's, you know, maybe there's a little bit of a message to that, because that he would like his daughter and this gentleman to stay. He wants it to the last thing a parent wants when a couple gets married is for them to not work and have to come back.
But isn't it also like with her behavior that he's just happy that the husband takes her back, because if he doesn't take her back, you know, and she was promiscuous, it's really a problem.
So, you know, the question being that or the analysis being that based on her decision to leave, the fact that he's willing to come after her, this father's like counting his lucky stars. That at least as we see it here, it is ending well. Unfortunately, it doesn't end well. But as he sees it here, and those are, you know, the person who we have the least problem within the story is most likely her father. I mean, there's nothing. He's just trying to be a good guy. Pasuk Hey, Vayi Bayom Arvi. It was on the fourth day. Vayishkimu Baboker. They arise in the morning. Vayakam Lalechas. He gets up. The man from Levi gets up to leave. Vayomer Avi Anara Al Chosno. The father of the girl turns to his son-in-law and says, Saad Lubcha. Kind of give a meal for your heart, pas lechem of bread, v'achar telechu, and afterwards you will go. Meaning, like, load up on carbs for the day. Let's have a meal. Have a meal with me. Specifically, he says lechem. But then, pasuk vav, v'yeshvu. So they return, v'yochlu shneim ne'achdav, v'yishtu. After they started eating, all of a sudden he brought in some drink. Drink is most likely wine, right? It happened to be back then they didn't have a beverage, possibilities like we have. It's basically water or wine. Vayishtu, they drank. Vayomer avi hanara el aish. He says to the man, Hoel na velin vayitav libecha. Kind of, I'm beseeching you, Hoel. I'm trying to convince you. Stay overnight. It'll be good for your heart. Meaning you just drank. Now why there is a shift in the previous pasuk is Vayomer Avi Hanara El Chosno, and previously he's referring to him as Ha'ish. I'm not sure why the Tanakh makes that switch. It could be that it's maybe it's some type of delicate hint that the son-in-law really wants to leave. Like he wants to this, you know, what he needs to get back to. I don't know. He's going to say something at one point that maybe implies he has something to get back to, but he didn't sign up for this. He married a girl from Beis Lechem Yehuda, but the girl moved in to Har Ephraim. He needs to get back to Har Ephraim. So maybe the fact that this father-in-law is referring to him and now has a ish, maybe there's a little bit of distance. I don't know. Pasuk Zayin. Vayakam ha'ish l'alecha. So now he gets up to go. Even on that fourth day, vayiftzar bo chosno, and the father-in-law is pressuring him. Vayasha vayalan sham, so he returns and he sleeps over the fourth night. He stays over. Why the father-in-law is being so insistent, I'm not sure. And you know, it's I didn't see any mefarshim say this, but basically the horrific story that's going to happens because they don't leave at the right time. They leave late in the day. Does that mean that? So is there some lesson in there that sometimes you have to let your guest go? I don't know, but maybe there's a delicate lesson in there that a person, right? A person has to remember when they're doing a chesed that there's like a chesed way to give do chesed, and like you sometimes have to read the other person what they want or what they need. And you match your chesed to them, because if you treat chesed as you want to do it on your terms, then it could not be chesed, right? There's the famous question of why is there no bracha by the mitzvah of tzedakah? There's no bracha by the mitzvah of tzedakah. It's a mitzvah to give tzedakah. So one of the Rishonim, maybe it's the Rashba, says it would think about what you would be doing. A poor person would come to you and say, "I want a few dollars." And you would say, "Hold on." You'd put on your jacket. You'd get a sitter. You'd say, "Baruch Atah Hashem on this poor person. I'm going to give tzedakah." Like that's not right. You're making a bracha on his or her being poor. It's not proper. It's not respect to the person. Give the tzedakah. I mean, the highest level of tzedakah is the person doesn't even know that you're giving it. You get credit in Shemaim. You get the mitzvah of tzedakah. But you can't make a bracha. That has to be their other approaches of maybe the person will say no. Right, how do you know the person's going to accept your money? Maybe they're going to say no. So since they might say no, you can't make a bracha because maybe you won't actually give the tzedakah. Sometimes that happens, right? You offer this and they don't think it's enough, so they say no. You know, some have a little extra strength. So but that idea here is that maybe there's some type of lesson that there's a chesed way to do chesed. That there's a that it was too much. Again, I didn't see anyone say that, and it's. Even if you say that, the fact that this would then happen because of that, you can't make your brain go if you actually think that way. Pasuk Ches. Vayashkin baboker bayom hachamishi. He gets up early on the fifth day. He's trying to leave. Desperate as he can. Leleches to go. Vayom ha'avian ha'ara, the father of the girl, says, Sa'ad na lebabcha. You know, have a meal for yourself, for your heart. Sustain yourself. V'his ma'amua ad netos hayom. And wait until, like, afternoon. The word noteh. Noteh means to lean. So wait until the day is leaning, meaning when the sun, right? Today, I don't know where, you see the sun. The sun begins to lean. It means, v'yochlu shnehem, and they go ahead and eat. It happens to be in these few psukim, it actually describes the sun and the day in a rather strange terms. Meaning we have terms for the sun going down that's more normal. This is a little bit strange. Ad netos hayom, till it's like leaning, and then we see in pasuk tes when he actually gets up at some point late in the day. By yakum ha'ish lalechas, the man gets up to go. Hu upilag shov in aro, he, his concubine, and his attendant. Vayomer lo chosno avian ara, the father-in-law kind of makes one last effort. Says to him, the father of the girl, hine na rafa hayom. Behold now, rafa hayom. Rafa means like a certain sense of weakness. Rafa means weakness. Hayom, the day. So the day is symbolic of the sun, because that's the symbol of daytime is the sun, right? Ask a kid to draw a picture of day, and they're going to probably include some type of picture of the sun. So Rashi says, Hashemesh migvura so, the sun begins to weaken. We all know, like, you're walking to shul, you're walking home from shul on these like cold October days. The sun is like, it really adds a lot if the sun is out. You walk back to shul for mincha time, the sun's there, but it's not providing that warmth anymore. The sun has to, obviously the sun is the same sun, but the how we humans perceive it, there's a certain rifayon, there's a certain weakness to the day. La'arov, going towards erev. Again, these are a little bit just strange terms to use. And the significance, I'm not sure. And he makes this last effort to say, "Linu na, stay over." Hine chanos hayom. Chanos hayom literally translates as it's the time of chonia. It's the time of camping. It's the time of when people are coming in, not going out. The term that Rashi quotes is that the everyone who's been traveling on the road, they go back to camp at this time. Lin po v'yitav levavecha, stay overnight over here, it'll be good for you, right? Night number five, what's the big deal? V'hishkamtem machar ledarkachem. He almost like tries to appease and say, you know what, you'll be able to get an early start tomorrow to your way. V'alachta olalecha, and you'll go back to your tent. Which is definitely strange. What are the chances that this person lives, that the Ish Levi who lives at Har Ephraim, that he lives in a tent? The tent is very, you know, in the Avram Avinu times, the Avram is nomadic. They're living in tents. They're moving from place to place. We have to imagine that Klal Yisrael and the Yemei HaShoftim, the whole idea of being coming settled in Eretz Yisrael, it was a house. It was a, okay, not necessarily the house that we have, but it was the ancient houses, houses of stone, houses of wood, places of permanence. And that's even part of the reason why a lot of trouble came from this. Why is it that Klal Yisrael had to conquer a land? Why didn't, after the flood, Hashem could have kind of made it that no one would ever live in the land of Canaan? Avram Avinu and his children would get the land. It'd be an empty land. They get the land. Okay, they have to go down to Egypt. They do their thing in Egypt. And then they come back to the land. Why do there have to be people inhabiting the land? And their approaches in Chazal basically said that Hashem wanted to give them a land that was already built. And that they just had to do, that they didn't necessarily, like the Jews who came in with Yehoshua didn't have to do what the early pioneers did in the modern state of Israel, where they would, you know, come to a field that's full of rocks because it hadn't been dealt with in hundreds of years. And before they could plant the kibbutz, they spent, you know, months and months just removing the rocks from the fields. And now right now we come and we look at it. It's like, you know, you it's beautiful. And then sometimes you come to other areas that is still rocky, and you're like, wait a minute, that's what the whole country looked like before they were able to do what they did. So you have to imagine that he lived in a house. What's the halakhta la ohalecha? You know, maybe you could say, you know, an ohel definitely speaks about a temporary nature. A bias speaks about firm. Right? That's even the Mishkan. The Mishkan in the desert was an ohel moed that only had curtains and it had wooden beams. When it comes to, we don't spend a lot of time at the Mishkan in Sefer Shoftim, but the entire time of Shoftim, there's a Mishkan in the city of Shiloh with stone walls. It had a semi-permanent status. Maybe he's almost hinting at the marriage. That if you were going to, right, when a person gets married, you say a bias neman b'Yisrael. I'm not saying this is fact, but maybe when you have a concubine, you say an ohel neman b'Yisrael. That it's not, that he's even hinting to, granted, he's happy that they're together, but probably in the back of his mind, he would love it if you know, I don't know if it's possible to, it is possible. I mean, if you could take a Pilegesh relationship and advance it, I mean, you could always do Kiddushin, maybe. You could definitely give a Ksuba, and therefore, right, she could have the financial security which comes with, you know, some level of permanence. So maybe he's hinting at that. Maybe it's just, you know, kind of the language. Maybe he's never been to his house. He doesn't know what it is. He says, and you go back to your tent. But the son-in-law is insistent. Pasuk Yud. V'lo avah ish lalun. The man from Levi, he doesn't want to stay over. Vayakum vayilach. He gets up and he goes. Vayavo ad nochach yivus. He comes close. He comes near to a place called Yivus. He Yerushalayim. That's the town that we call Yerushalayim. But it wasn't called Yerushalayim yet. It was still called Yivus. It belonged to the Yivusi people, the Jebusites. The Imo, Tzemer Chamorim, Chavushim, he had his donkeys, they were packed up. Upilag Sho Imo, he has his Pilagesh. But the day was short when he left. So Pasuket Aleph, Haim Im Yivus, Vahayom Rad Ma'od. They were near Yivus, this whole, right, he, his attendant, and the Pilegesh with the donkeys, the Hayom Rad. The day was Rad, like Yarad. They were going down. The day was going down Ma'od. The day was going down Ma'od means the sun. Again, why another example of kind of referring, why didn't it say Shemesh, or why didn't it say sun, Chama, which is more, I think, more common, Hayom Rad Ma'od. Vayomer hanar el Adonav, the attendant said to his master, L'cha na v'nasura el ir hayivusi hazos v'nalin ba. Let us go, let us turn off the road to this Jebusite city, and let's stay over there. Meaning, you can't be on the road at night, it's not safe. So let's seek safety. And his initial thought is to seek the safety by the Yevusim. Pasuk Yud Beis. Vayomer Elav Adonav, the master, meaning the Ish Levi, says back to his attendant, Lo nasur el ir nachri. We're not going to turn off, we're not going to go off the road to an ir nachri, to a foreign city. Asher lo b'nei Yisrael heina, that's not from b'nei Yisrael. Va'avarnu ad Giva. Let's keep going a little bit. Let's pass a little bit, at least until Giva. Giva is in the land of Binyamin, which makes good sense. Right now, they're by the Yevusim. Right now, they're by what we would call the old city of Yerushalayim, the ancient upper city, which was not under control of B'nai Yisrael. The Klal Yehoshua and Klal Yisrael had gotten rid of most of the Yevusim in that area, but the Yevusim were left with one place. They were left with what we call Yerushalayim, and it's not until the time of David HaMelech that area is negotiated for and conquered, and then David brings the Aron there. David recognizes that this is the place that all in Sefer, you know, the second half of Sefer Devarim, where Hashem keeps saying, the place that I'll choose to rest my name, the place that I'll choose to raise my name, is that place. So David brings the Aron there. He initiates that Yerushalayim will be the Yerushalayim that we know. But at this point, it's not that way. It's an ir nachri. It's a foreign city, and it's it's so tragic that when the story doesn't end well, and you go backwards and take a look at this pasuk, for us, we're seeing it here, he didn't want to go to a foreign city that wasn't from Bnei Yisrael, presumably because he didn't think they'd be treated well in a foreign city. So he chooses to like be a little bit risky, push the journey a little bit more, go to Geva, which is in the land of Binyamin, which obviously makes good sense. Whenever we talk about the city of Yerushalayim and the old city of Yerushalayim, it borders on the tribe of Yehuda and Binyamin. The Yerushalayim generally, and definitely the kind of, I think, a good portion of the modern city of Yerushalayim would fall into Yehuda's territory, but it was chosen that Binyamin's territory would get the actual Beis HaMikdash, and the Chazal explained that I think there was even the boundary line even was somewhere in the Beis HaMikdash where it may have even gone through part of the Mizbech. I forget the exact details, but that the Kodesh HaKadashim rested definitely in the tribe of Binyamin. So the fact that he's near Yevus, and then he keeps going a little bit more, even though the sun has gone down, and he finds himself in Giva, which is in the land of Binyamin, it definitely follows. Pasuk Yud Gimel. So after saying that we're not going to go to Yevus, Vayomer Lanaro, he says to his lad, Lecha v'nikrava ba'achar ha'makomos, let us go. The word lecha here does not mean you, but the Mitzudas Tzion points out it's a lashon of halach. It's just missing some letters. Lecha means like halach, to go. The nikrava will come close by achar ha'makomos, one of the proper places. V'lanu begiva or berama. We'll either go to Giva, we'll go to Rama, we'll go to a Jewish town to try to stay over. Pasuk Yedaled. Vayavru vayelchu. They push forward. They go a little more. V'tavo lehem hashemesh. The sun had totally like come upon them, meaning it's set. Eitzel HaGiva, next to Giva, Asher LeBinyamin, which is to the tribe of Binyamin, Pasuk Tesvav, Vayasuru Sham. So they turned off the road there, Lavo Lalun BaGiva, to come and to stay overnight in Giva. Vayavo Vayeshev Berechov HaIr. They come in and they're settling in Berechov HaIr. The Berechov HaIr is the city square. The same way that most cities don't, I don't know anymore, have like the city square. You get that feeling in the old city of Yerushalayim in the Jewish quarter, what they call the chatzer, the plaza. It's the open area, and like that's where people meet, and there are these restaurants and shops, and there may be places to sit down. So, there definitely was a concept of Rechov HaIr in the times of then, even in the times of the Mishnah. Maybe you would say like our cities are so big, I don't know, Lahavdil. Maybe you'd say like maybe that's like Times Square. Times it has the word square, Rechov. But when you think of Manhattan just so huge, it's hard to say that anything is like the town square. I don't know. Maybe one, I think one time, a lot of when there were protests protests by city people like gathered by City Hall. Maybe you'd say in New Rochelle, maybe in front of City Hall. I don't know, but there definitely always was a Rechov HaIr in times of old. Even in the times of the Mishnah, they speak about it. Like during in Eretz Yisrael, they just started asking for rain last night. I don't know if it rained today. Did it rain today? So they started, because it's the seventh day of Cheshvan. They already started last night. They already started asking for rain. The same Talmud LeBracha. So if there's no rain, the Mishnayos and Maseches Tainos speak about the fast days. And one of the things that they would do is, as it got more severe, if there was no rain, they would take the Aron out of the shul, it was like on wheels, and they would bring it Berechov HaIr. Because the scene, right, imagine, like the scene of the Aron that you always see in front of the shul, and it's like special, seeing that like bear in the middle of the street square, in the city square, it's like jarring, and it's meant to be that way. It's meant to inspire the people to do tshuva. So they're sitting Berechov HaIr. The Ein Ish Me'asef Otam Habayit Alalun. No one is gathering them up towards their house to stay. to stay overnight. Presumably, there's no inn, there's no place to be taken in, to be taken inside and given shelter, unless someone would reach out to them, and no one is reaching out to them, and that's the whole reason why they went to this, the reason why they chose the Jewish home, the Jewish town, most likely was to get some sort of hospitality, but nobody's gathering them in. At that point, you already have a red flag on this town, right? Red flag on this town. We know that we're supposed to be right. The character traits of a Jew is Rachmanim, Baishanim, Gomel Chasadim. They're supposed to be Gomel Chasad, right? That's we're supposed to be kind. And there's no. Where's the Chesed committee? Where's the Hachnasas Orchim committee? It's lacking. There's no one. Pasuk Tezayin, Vihine Ish Zakein. Ba min ma'aseu min asada ba'erev. There was an old man coming from his ma'aseu, coming from his actions. Again, a little bit of a strange term. Usually we would use the word like avodah. Coming from his actions, min asada, from the field. He was coming from his work, ba'erev, at night, at the evening. Va'ish mehar Ephraim, and the man from Har Ephraim, v'hug, he was a man from Har Ephraim, who gar b'Giva. He's living in Giva, this old man. V'anshe ha-makom b'nei Yemini. We hear that the people of the place, they're b'nei Yemini, they're from the tribe of Binyamin. So this man, as we'll see, he's the one who chooses to be hospitable. So some of the Mepharshim point out that it again, we're adding like another red flag to the town. The town is not hospitable, welcoming of guests. There's one person who's willing to welcome guests. He's not even from there. He's not from there. And you could also point out that he's an ish zakein. That it's kind of he has right. There's a certain. Sometimes we use it today. In a. It's sad that we have to use the phrase, but sometimes we use the phrase like they don't make him like that anymore. That there's a certain quality, there's certain character traits of old, and that this person, he's a throwback to proper midos, and so he'll be willing to. There is also maybe you would say there's a level of kinship, although he doesn't know that. The fact that they happen to both be from now. He's a Levi from Har Ephraim. This individual is most likely an Ephraim person who's now living among the Bnei Yemini. Pasuk Yud Zayin. Vayisa'ina vayar se'ish ha'oreach b'rochov ha'ir. So the old man lifts his eyes and he sees that there's a man, the guest, who's in the city square. Vayomer ha'ish ha'zakein ana se'lech ume'ayin tavo. He asks him two questions. Where are you going and from where are you coming? Most likely, he's not exactly interested in the answers. This is that's what you say to a guest, like, where are you from? We do that at Kiddush, right? Someone calls, oh, where are you from? And then we immediately decide to play Jewish geography when, not everyone can play Jewish geography. And, not everyone is from, like, New York and Teaneck. And, So he answers back innocently. Pasuk Yerches, Vayomer Elav, Ovrim Anachnu Beis Lechem Yehuda. We are passing. We had been in Beis Lechem Yehuda, Ad Yarkase Ephraim. We're trying to get to Yarkase Har Ephraim. Misham Anochi. I happen to be from there. The Eilech Ad Beis Lechem Yehuda. I had originally traveled to Beis Lechem Yehuda. Notice how he doesn't tell him why he went. Kind of like keep the business quiet. The Es Beis Hashem Ani Holech. All of a sudden, new piece of information that we had not been told. And I am going to the house of Hashem. The Ein Ish Me'asefo Si HaBaisa, but no one has taken me in. So whether or not his intention was always to like go home to Har Ephraim and then also go to Shiloh, to the Beis Hashem, maybe. Maybe it's his way of trying to, you would say, almost like impress his potential host. Like, I'm not just a regular person. I'm someone who's, I go to the Beis Hashem. I'm religious. I go to Shiloh. You know what? Maybe he's going to Shiloh to be thankful that he got reunited with his Pilegesh. It doesn't seem to. We don't get so much insight, right? Rashi just says Beis Hashem l'Shiloh, going to Shiloh. And not only that, but he points out the Einish me'asefo si'abaisa. No one's inviting me home. Not only that, pasuk yotes the gam teven gam mispo yesh lachamareinu. Not only that, I have the provisions. I have straw and animal food for our donkeys. The gam lechem v'yayin yesh li la'amasecha v'lanar imavadecha. And I have wine for me. I have bread and wine for me. And your maidservant, he's being respectful to the old man that he's talking to, referring to his own concubine as this old man's maidservant. Ula na'ar, and to the na'ar, im avadecha, that he's referring to himself as avadecha. So he's turning to the old person, old man, and saying, I am your servant, which all throughout Tanakh, even when those are not true, when the relationship is not actual maidservant, actual servant, that's a way of ingratiating yourself to the other person. Ein machsor kol davar. Nothing. We're not lacking a thing. It makes sense why he's got all these provisions, because after we saw how much his father-in-law took care of him, it only makes sense that he leaves with proper provisions. The only thing he doesn't have is shelter. Shelter for a whole host of reasons. Number one, the elements, the cold, the rain, the whatever. Number two is protection. Is that the whole reason why they're not on the road? Why, if they have all these provisions, why don't they just stay on the side of the road? The answer is the side of the road is not safe. The side of the road is not a place that anyone wants to spend the night. Vayom pasachah, vayom arish hazakein. So the old man says, Shalom lach, peace be to you. Rakol machsorcha alai. But everything that you need is going to be on me. Rak berachov al talin. And not only, he's saying two levels. I'm going to take care of you. Only, like, the most important, only don't sleep in the street, meaning you can come with me. Pasachav aleph. Vayivieh leveso. He brings him to his house. Vayaval lachamorim. He prepared food for the donkeys. It's a little bit of a strange word, vayaval. It means to, like, we had it in the Parshas Noach with the word bavel. Balal, bavel means to, like, mix together, a bilbul. It means to, the Metzudah Sion says, it means to make like animal food, like to mix it up. Vayichutzu raglehem, he washed their feet. Vayochlu vayishtu, they ate and they drank. It happens to be, he's following like the proper procedure of first take care of the animals, then take care of the people, and everything seems to be going well. So far you would have no idea why the story is going to turn tragic. Unfortunately, it does. And Be'ez Hashem, next time we'll pick up here with the scene being set. It's a good place to stop. So Be'ez Hashem, next week we'll continue with the story. If you don't read ahead, you sleep well at this point.